Have you found yourself in a position where you had to remain neutral? I think we've all been in that position, haven't we? I remember when I was substitute teaching in an elementary school, I would have these little kids coming up to me, "Teacher, teacher, so-and-so did this. Teacher, has this happened? So-and-so's done this." And you just remain neutral because you don't really know what happened. You're just trying to be fair, and you have to let those kids learn to work it out. I mean, they're not doing anything major here. They're just trying to learn to work it out, and you have to remain neutral. Marriage counselors must remain neutral because somebody comes in and says, "I'm having trouble with my spouse. This is what they're doing. This is what they're saying." And so the marriage counselor wisely says, "Well, let me talk to your spouse," and then they hear the other side of the story. And then they have to hear both sides back and forth until finally they figure out, they help that couple arrive at a solution. But the marriage counselor has to remain neutral, at least at first, until he's able to figure out the facts. But there's a dangerous neutrality when it comes to what's right and what's wrong. And it's hard. It's hard to determine at times if I should remain neutral. But I do think it's easier. I think it's easier to stay neutral because nobody's right, nobody's wrong, and there's no family conflicts, there's no work conflicts, and there's no church conflicts. But does it really work out that way? Well, in 1938, the world was concerned about a dictator, Adolf Hitler. He was invading countries, he was bringing war, nations were afraid, but everybody wanted to stay neutral. They did not want to have another world war, and so they were doing their best to try to avoid conflict. And so the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Neville Chamberlain, met Hitler, and they worked out an agreement so there would be no war with Germany. And he called it peace in our time. So I'm just going to play this. This is about a minute and a half long clip. I want you to notice how excited this man is because he's worked out an agreement. And also, I want you to notice the response of the people. So let's play that. Here we go.
The settlement of the Czechoslovakian problem, which has now been achieved, is, in my view, only the prelude to a larger settlement in which all Europe may find peace. This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. Some of you perhaps have already heard what it contains, but I would just like to read it to you. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister, have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
He stayed neutral, and how well did that work out for them? Well, it's not that easy to stay neutral, but I think most people want to stay neutral, right? They want to get along. We don't want conflict. But sometimes it's hard to remain silent, isn't it? It's hard to remain silent when cities are burning, when police officers are being attacked or injured. It's hard to remain neutral, but many people are doing it. Someone says, now they know how it feels. The police officer gets brutally attacked. And people are saying, now he knows, now they know how it feels. Or someone says, listen, these protesters have a rough life. They just want to blow off steam, so why are you worried about it? So they want to destroy some things. It's not your house. It's just, here's a big one, it's just politics. Well, the state of Nevada has opened up casinos now. They're at 50% capacity, but they're not allowing the churches to open. Nothing to worry about. It's not our church. Just be positive. Think happy thoughts. Stay neutral. You don't want to start an argument. The last thing you want to do is be called a racist by somebody. If you disagree with somebody today, you could be labeled a racist. So just stay neutral. Christians have always struggled with being neutral and staying neutral. Whether it's in our society or whether it's in our church or whether it's in our families, it's easy to take the path of least resistance. Now, when we study 1 John, and that's where we've been studying, as I've been reading this and studying this book, I find that it's not necessarily an enjoyable read. This is not a book that you're going to pick up and on a cold winter's night and in front of the fireplace and just read and just feel warm thoughts. Because John really comes out with some statements that are black and white. And I realize that today we don't necessarily want to hear this. We have so much negativity going on in our world and our life. We just want positive stuff. I understand that. But this, we have to remember, this letter was written for a good purpose. And so there's too much gray in our world. So 1 John is full of contrast. John covers things like light versus darkness, or love versus hate, or truth versus a lie, or God versus the world. Today we have another contrast, a child of God versus a child of the devil. Now in chapter 2 of 1 John, John writes about the final hour. He basically is telling us things are going to get worse before Jesus comes back. The devil is going to increase his activities. In our text today, it says that the times will be lawless and deceptive. So basically, when it comes down to it, Christians are not going to be able to stay neutral when it comes to sin. So John gives us a contrast between a Christian and a non-Christian. And you see there's differences that cannot be ignored, and it's impossible for a Christian to stay neutral. Today I want to focus on one big difference. One big difference between a Christian and a non-Christian is that a Christian does what is right. Now I want to remind you that John was dealing with false teachers in the church. But they didn't concern themselves about doing right. They weren't concerned about sinning. So let's turn to 1 John chapter 3. That's where our text today. And as we're reading this, I want you to ask yourself, let's look very closely at this. Does it ever say in here that a Christian never sins? Let's look at 1 John 3, and I'm going to look at verses 4 through 10. Everyone who sins breaks the law. In fact, sin is lawlessness. But you know that he appeared so that he might take our sin away. And in him is no sin. No one who lives in him keeps on sinning. No one who continues to sin has either seen him or known him. Dear children, do not let anyone lead you astray. The one who does what's right is righteous, just as he is righteous. The one who does what is sinful is of the devil, because the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. No one who's born of God will continue to sin, because God's seed remains in them. They cannot go on sinning because they have been born of God. This is how we know who the children of God are and who the children of the devil are. Anyone who does not do what's right is not God's child, nor is anyone who does not love their brother and sister. Now there's two words for sin in here, this first verse. The first word is basically to break the law of God. And the second word is the word lawless, which means a rebellion against God. It's an attitude of being unashamed. But let me give you an example between the two words. The first word is somebody who's driving along, they're not paying attention, and they're speeding, and they get pulled over. And they say, "I'm so sorry, I didn't realize it." You get the ticket, "I didn't mean it," but they broke the speeding law, right? The lawless word represents somebody who's ripping down the highway, they get a ticket, they deny they were speeding, and then they go on and continue to rip through, and they drag race through the next town that they're in. Two different words, but verse 8 would describe the devil who rebelled against God, who was cast to the earth. And since the beginning, he's continued to sin, he's continued to destroy. And Jesus described him in John chapter 8, verse 44. Jesus was here in this chapter, he was condemning false teachers. And he says in verse 44, "You belong to the father, to your father, the devil, and you want to carry on your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is the liar and the father of lies." Our passage says in verse 5 that Jesus came to take away our sin. And then in verse 8, it says that he came to destroy the devil's work. So as we've looked at this chapter, did anybody see in there any verse that says Christians do not sin? It's not there. But there's some people that will take this passage and they believe that it teaches that Christians do not sin anymore. But remember, our chapter, our study in 1 John 1 says if we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves and we call God a liar. So no Christian is sinless. But when it comes to sin, there's a difference between a Christian and a non-Christian. So look closely at our text. Verse 6 says, "No one who lives in him keeps on sinning. No one continues to sin." Verse 9, "No one born of God will continue to sin because God's seed remains in them. They cannot go on sinning because they've been born of God." So the word is, they continue. They go on. The point is, a life that's dominated by sin. I've heard it this way: Christians are not sinless, but they sin less. See, Christians are going to sin. They're going to fail occasionally in isolated ways. It's going to happen. But Christians walk with God. That means it's impossible to be in a right relationship with Jesus and just continue to sin more and more. Now, of course, the false teachers here that John is exposing were, it was obvious by their lives that they weren't following Jesus. They ignored their sins. The character of their lives mirrored their father, the devil. So they were trying to seduce. They were trying to mislead. John says you can tell who a Christian is, and one of the differences is that they do not live a life of continual sin. They live a life of faithfulness. They do what's right. Now, let me pause for a second here. You're probably thinking, why are we hearing this sermon? This is so basic. I already know this. This is review. It might be, but things are changing in our world. And right and wrong have switched places, and the world has muddied up what is right and what is true. And it's getting harder and harder to discern what is right. I mean, I have seen documented videos. I have seen eyewitness accounts of destruction. And then I have seen news anchors and politicians say that what I just saw isn't real. They're basically saying lying is okay. It's part of the game. Now, do you remember back in the good old days, if you got caught lying and somebody exposed you, it was kind of a shame. People had to retract what they did. They had to admit. But today, lying is fine. It's acceptable. if it accomplishes a good purpose. Do you remember what John 8 said the devil was? He's a liar. The Bible is full of verses on lying. Revelation 21:8 says liars will be in hell. So if you are a Christian and you believe right and wrong and good and evil, you'll find that it's getting harder and harder to speak out, to be accepted by family and friends, most prominently, most society. In several of the main cities of the United States, there's levels of unprecedented murder and crime. But you know what? You can't find anything about that on the news, because they are fine with what's happening. So part of our country doesn't even know, and then part of the country wants to stay neutral. So here are some actual attitudes that I have run into as I've been investigating this issue. They're just police officers. No one's dying. So they do a little bit of destruction. Those protesters are bringing change. They are getting people's attention. So physical violence is being ignored today. People are being hit. Bones are being broken. People are being bloodied. People are being permanently injured. And the answer is, well, nobody's dying. It's an acceptable level of violence. This is right here in our community. It's the same thing. There's a dangerous neutrality. If I make a stand, then I'm going to offend somebody in my family. I'm going to go against my political party. Now, it would be different, I think, if violence came to our community. If people's houses started getting destroyed and people started getting beat up here, I don't think people would be neutral. But their dangerous neutrality says it's okay as long as it doesn't happen to me, as long as it doesn't happen in our community. Not in my town, not in my property. Well, Britain tried to stay neutral. Hitler was taking over Europe, and Chamberlain signed this agreement, had his signature right on the paper. Peace in our time. But less than a year later, Hitler's aggressions continued. He invaded Poland, and it wasn't long before Britain declared war on Germany. Neutrality wasn't the answer. We have to be careful in our own lives that we're not neutral when it comes to something that's right and wrong. Verse 7 is what I want to focus on. It says, the one who does what's right is righteous. God calls us to do right all the time, every day. Because we follow Jesus, we strive to be obedient, and we try to be obedient even in the small things when no one is looking. I remember a farmer lived in a small town, and he discovered an opportunity as he was doing his work. I don't know exactly where he found this, but he discovered that on his neighbor's property that was right up next to his, he could tap into his neighbor's power source, and he could use his neighbor's power for all of his farm machinery. And he got away with it for a while. Now, this is a deacon in the church. This is a nice guy. Everybody liked him, but nobody saw what he was doing. But I don't know how it was, but they discovered it. And there was a degree of shame, and he was caught doing what he did, and he had to unhook his power from the neighbor's power. He was basically just stealing. Christians do what's right, even in small things, even in our everyday lives. It's a struggle. But when we stop trying to be faithful in the small things, then we have lost our way. Now, I realize this has kind of been a gloomy sermon, but it's real life. This is what we're dealing with right now. I don't want you to come away discouraged, because there's a better day coming. We have a reason for hope. So what I've done is I've saved the good news for last. If you look in our text again, 1 John 3, I want to read the first three verses. See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called the children of God, and that's what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know Him. Dear friends, now we are children of God. My friends, But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. All who have this hope in him purify themselves, just as he is pure. John says, see, take notice, be in wonder of God's wonderful love. His love on the cross that was unconditional and undeserved. And what he did on that cross, that one time in the past, remains for us today. As I was doing the sermon, there was a beautiful hymn that came to mind. I stand amazed in the presence of Jesus the Nazarene, and wonder how he could love me, a sinner condemned unclean. How marvelous, how wonderful, and my song shall ever be. How marvelous, how wonderful is my Savior's love for me. That is amazing. It's amazing that God loved us so much. It's amazing that he forgave me of my sin. It's amazing that he called us children of God, that he adopted us, and that's love. And as beautiful as that is, the world doesn't understand it. And they reject Jesus. And when we do what's right, they're going to reject us. But God's not finished with us, because when Jesus returns, he's going to change us. John says it's a mystery. And what we will be has not yet been revealed. Even an apostle didn't quite understand all this. But one thing that he says, we shall be like him. As children of God, we're becoming like him right now, every day. We're becoming like God. But when Jesus returns, it says we will be changed. We will be transformed beyond words. When Jesus comes, we will see him as he is. See, we're in a troubled world where right is wrong and wrong is right. And it's easy to become discouraged. And it's easy to say, why do I keep trying? Why should I just keep on being faithful? I just kind of want to be neutral. I don't want to upset anybody. Why should I keep on being pure? Because we love our Father. And we don't want to be ashamed when he comes back. When I was growing up, one of the number one things that motivated me was that I wanted to make my Father proud. See, I knew how much he loved me, but I did not want to ever do something that would make him be disappointed in me, something that discouraged me. So I wasn't earning his love, but I certainly did not want to feel that I had disappointed him. I wanted him to be proud of me. And just the thought of Jesus loving us, knowing that he will return, knowing that he will change us, knowing that we'll see him, that hope motivates us to stay pure. And I'm reminded of Matthew 5:8 that said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. I want to be pure in heart, and I want to do what's right. Don't you? Well, I've talked a lot in my sermon today about doing the right things. And one of the most difficult things is that there's people in our community right around us here that live good lives. They live good lives. They're honest people. They're good to their neighbors. They're friendly. They help people in need. These are good, honest people right here in this community. But if you try to discuss the Christian faith with them, I'm sure that you're probably going to hear what I've heard many times in my life. Listen, I live a better life than anybody in your church. I live a good moral life. So I'm not a believer. I mean, I'm not against Jesus. Serving him is not my thing. I'm glad you do, but that's not for me. Well, my friends, you can't remain neutral on Jesus. You just cannot do it. Either you're with him all the way, or you're not. And it's not about how good you are. Humanly speaking, it really doesn't matter what kind of good things you do. All the sin that you ever committed in your life stays in you. When you're a child, throughout your life, it never goes away. The sin continues to be on you. And there's no way that you can wipe it away, humanly speaking. Now, you can live a good life and you can feel like, well, I've kind of redeemed myself from my sin. That's an effort, but good works cannot wipe away sin. It doesn't matter how good you are. There's only one way to wipe away your sin, and that is to know Jesus Christ, to have a relationship with you. And the Bible says when we believe, we turn from our sin, we confess Him, we're baptized, then our sins are washed away. All the sin that we've ever done, that's the only way it can happen. And Christians, the only way that we, the way that we live our lives is because we have been forgiven, we try to be a good person. And we try to do good things. But all the good things we do, it doesn't forgive us of our sin. Jesus did that. So here's the deal. We're no better than anybody else in this community. The only difference is we're forgiven. And so the question is, are you neutral? Are you in the middle? Are you like, well, you know, I live for Jesus, you know, on Sundays. Or, you know, some days I live for Him, some days I don't. Well, are you, which side are you on? Are you on the side of the Lord? Or are you trying to be neutral, which means you're on the other side? You can't be neutral. So do you want that forgiveness? That's what we have. Do you want to know that when the day comes, when you leave this world, that your sins will all, they're all forgiven. And the day that you're with Jesus, you will not have anything to be ashamed of. So we have our song of invitation. And we're going to be singing that hymn that I sang a little bit of. I stand amazed in the presence. If you have a decision, we invite you to make that. Let's all stand.